gentlemen, welcome to the opening session of the House Water Committee in the 73rd session of the Oregon Legislature. We have mostly an informational meeting with a couple of minor organizational issues to attend to first. The first item on our agenda will be to consult with staff as to anything that we need to know before we begin.
The only announcement I want to make is with the weather situation being what it is, what I've been informed is that no matter how much snow or ice is on the ground, the building will be open on Monday. But if we don't have power, the building will be closed. So we will be meeting as scheduled.
Okay. There is a possibility, as we heard on the floor this morning, that we may want to check in. But we will assume we're in session and, or in meeting until... On Monday, and you know, and we will trust that whatever the form of precipitation is, that it will not interfere with our life here, but we will always welcome precipitation in this committee. And right now, the more of the white stuff we can get in the mountains, the happier members of the committee, and I'm sure most of the people who will be talking to us, you know, will be. So
I don't think so.
We're the one group in the building that prays regularly, Representative, for bad weather.
Precipitation is our friend.
Precipitation is our friend, and you know, we'll remain so. The first. Thing that I think we have is a need to adopt committee rules. We have a boilerplate set of rules. The chair does not propose any amendments or changes in those rules, but if any member has a suggestion, we will listen to that suggestion and discuss it. Hearing none, the chair would entertain a motion to adopt the proposed committee rules.
So moved.
Representative Dingfelder moves that the House Water Committee adopt the proposed committee rules. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The next thing we need, I think, to do is introduce our staff, and first Sandy Thiel-Circa, who has staffed a couple of committees for me in my tenure here at the legislature, and I can't say how pleased I am to have her here. She certainly knows how to approach me in such a way that I don't become too offended. And keep me straight doing what we're supposed to be doing. And I think she's just absolutely tops, and we're delighted that you're with us, Sandy.
Thanks.
New to us this year is Pamela Anderson as our committee assistant, and we're delighted to have her with us. Hope to see a lot of her smiling face. Then with that, we need to make sure that our committee itself is introduced, and we have Representative Billy Dalto on the far end. As he indicated, he was grateful for having the chair closest to the door so he could sneak in, you know, inconspicuously. To my immediate, or to my far left, we have Representative Barnhart. Representative Barnhart was with us a session ago until he pleaded a case in front of the then highest court in the legislature or in the House and manage to get a transfer to another committee. But we're glad to see him with us, and I know that he'll be very helpful. And sitting immediately to my left is Representative Dingfelder, and she is one of the vice chairs of the committee. And I can't tell you how pleased I am to have Representative Dingfelder not only on the committee but as vice chair. She has been with me as a vice chair for a number of sessions and a number of committees, and she too, I have this kind of confined feeling that these two women, one on my right, one on my left, who will spend the biggest part of the next 5 months making sure that I don't do anything that is too egregious. Seriously, Representative Dingfelder is a real asset to the committee. She is certainly extremely knowledgeable, and it really is my pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be back.
Thank you. Two other members, we have Representative Brown, who is detained, and Representative Brown is from the Coast. He will be new to the Water Committee. We have Representative Krummel, who we got a note that he's running a bit late and will be along in a minute as the vice chair. And then the other member that has some knowledge of water and water issues, second time on this committee, Representative Schaffler, and I'm sure he'll be along shortly as well. One of the things that we are blessed with in this particular session is with almost the majority of the members that have not had any experience on the Water Committee. One of the members, I think, I think I'm quoting correctly, when talking about water, was it something you put it in a cup, and drink? And the member would appreciate the motto of the House Water Committee conflicts somewhat with that when we have whiskey is for drinking, water is for fighting. And as we will discover very shortly into this session, there will probably be some fighting over the issues of water. A couple of kind of editorializing, if I can. It's kind of a poor statement, as I know I can because I have a gavel on it. I need to clarify the protocol that we will follow as far as hearings are concerned. The first protocol will be that, and we will pay especially strict attention to this, that those individuals from outside of the what is kind of the 100-mile guideline that we have, those individuals that have a commute to get here, the public who has a commute to get here, will always be high in the queue as far as the ability to testify. The first people who will testify on a bill will be, or that may testify on a bill that we're hearing, will be fellow legislators. They will always have a first opportunity. We will extend them that courtesy, which is normal throughout the building in all of the committees. The next group in the queue would be the sponsors of or whoever is proposing who has proposed the bill that we will be dealing with. Those individuals will have the opportunity to explain what the bill is and its meaning and any reasons that they have for bringing it forth. Following that, then the public testimony will take precedent over testimony from, and I, you know, don't particularly like the words, but professional lobby and agency, sort of thing. Not that we don't honor and respect professional lobby and the agencies, merely that they are paid to be here and the public is using their time and money to come, and so they get the priority on this. And the public who gets number one priority are those from outside of the area, and the further away or the more inconvenient the timing is for them, the higher they move up in that. We will always try to recognize if someone has a need, they have another commitment and you need to, you know, get your say in, we will try to ensure that we are able to work with you on that, so don't hesitate to ask Sandy or the chair if you can somehow or another get moved up on something. Now, because I did see Brendan come in, didn't I? Yeah. Because we have LightSafe Council here, and because we have one bill that I wish to introduce as a committee bill, I'd like to get ahead of the order at this point and move to a work session for the introduction of committee bills and ask LightSafe Council Brendan McCarthy to explain House or LightSafe Council draft number 65 to us as kind of quickly as you can, and the intent of.
Members of the committee, Brendan McCarthy, Legislative Council. Good to see you all again. Look forward to working with you and having a productive and hopefully happy time in front of the Water Committee. And I apologize already for all the people in the audience who I'm now preempting, but LC 65 was... The general intent of LC 65 was to try to unify terminology used throughout the Water Rights Act and the various chapters of the Water Rights Act, 536, 537, 540, and I think there's a little bit of 543 in there, if I'm not mistaken. The basic process I went through in determining what terminology to use was to look at how the people who had a or have a water right or right to use water, how they were referred to, generally speaking, and found that they were referred to in a variety of ways as holders of water rights, as owners of water rights, as users of water rights, as owners of land to which a water right is appurtenant, and various other ways that they were referred to, and tried to figure out which one way was the predominant manner of referring to those individuals. And the predominant manner was a person who holds a water right or a holder of a water right. So perhaps in hopefully not a meat axe manner, I went through the statutes carefully and changed those references to that one unified reference, a holder of a water right or a water right holder. And that's the basic process I went through. And so hopefully I didn't make any actual substantive changes, although I'm sure there would be people who would disagree. But the intent was not to make any substantive changes, and was to take that ultimately that what that person is, whatever they are, and just unify those terms.
Thank you, Brendan. Are there any questions from Legislative Council quickly on this?
I should
maybe point out that this was kind of a joint idea of Legislative Council and the Chair, we would go on with an explanation that there's a hopefully a subsequent bill coming that will take on a much broader task, and that task will be looking at something of a complete rewrite of water law. Actually what the bill will be is a task force. Proposal will be a task force, so that remains for something yet to come. We've tried to, as you can see, tighten the terminology of the relating clause on this bill so that we don't get too far astray with this bill. We've got the terminology is revised. The terminology,
this one,
relating clause is revised the terminology to water rights, and so that we're, you know, fairly narrow in this, and it can't be used for any kind of broad purposes, I guess. See.
I should note, Mr. Chair, that we now have a lawyer committee, so it's
with some
trepidation
that
I knew
we
that
venture into this uncharted waters of having legal opinions among our committee itself. So we've been able to flounder our way again around without having to worry about little things like that, just having to work through a Legislative Council. Now we're going to have in-house, and I don't know how that's going to work. With that, if there's no other discussion, I would entertain a motion to introduce LC-65 as a committee bill, as I always do, reminding everyone that there's support of the introducing it as a committee bill in no way obligates you as a committee member to support the bill when it comes up, if it ever gets to a work session, nor does it obligate you in any way if it goes to the floor to vote yes or no on it. This is merely to get the topic in front of us as a committee so that we can discuss it.
I'll move LC-65 as a committee bill for the Water Committee.
Representative Dingfelder moves LC-65 as a committee bill for the Water Committee. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We'll close the work session then and go to an thank you, Brendan.
Thank you.
Go to an informational meeting, which has been titled by staff as Water Rights 101. Purposes of the of the committee, the Department Water Resource Department has generously offered to provide this information. They'll be able, I'm sure, to condense Water Rights 101 into a testimony this afternoon that would be worthy of 3 credits at any law university in the United States. So with that, if Phil Ward, Director of the Water Resource Department, and Adam Sussman, the Senior Policy Coordinator for the department.
Mr. Chair, we are going to use this screen. Would you like us to move it a little slower, do you think?
We can't.
Okay.
You can't.
Well, I would ask the good Representative Barnhart, because this room is not technology savvy. We're going to have to do a little shifting. And are you going to, do you want us to turn the lights off and stuff now, or do you want to wait a minute?
We could certainly do it now. It'd be just fine, I think. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name's Phil Ward. I'm the director of the Oregon Water Resources Department. And with me today is Adam Sussman, our senior policy coordinator and the person that does our legislative work. So you will see Adam regularly in this committee. I was counting back, Mr. Chair, as I was listening to you reminisce a little bit about past sessions a few minutes ago. I believe the first meeting of a House Water Committee in this building that I attended was perhaps in 1985, and have been in and out of this particular committee in different capacities over the years. So I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today and talk a little bit. I'm going to talk a little bit about the department, and then Adam's going to give us the brief primer on Water 101. So if we could have the first slide.
Okay. What am I supposed to have? Just the arrow? Next one?
Yes. You bet. Let's go on to the next one. The Water Resources Department has established two co-equal goals based on its statutory charges to facilitate the supply of water to users of all types here in Oregon, and to promote and facilitate the stewardship of that resource here in our state. So those are our two co-equal goals. The Water Resources Department is governed from a policy and rulemaking standpoint by the Water Resources Commission. Obviously, the staff is part of the executive branch, and the director reports to the governor, but the commission is the rulemaking arm of our organization. And if we can go on back to that commission slide, Pamela. Get back there, possibly. One more. Oh, another. There we go. So we have a seven-member commission, and currently several of those commission spots are vacant. We're hoping to see those filled fairly early in this new year. Okay, go ahead.
Could you tell me which one of those are vacant, Phil?
You bet. The Northwest region is vacant. The North Central region, the Central Oregon region there, is vacant, Mr. Chair. And then our East Side at Large Commissioner, Ty Hansel from Hermiston, is up on his appointment time. So he needs to be replaced as well. So those three positions are essentially need to be filled on the Water Resources Commission. Okay, we're ready to go. One more. Great, thanks. The agency itself has five divisions. We're currently at about 140 FTE statewide in the agency itself, with another 20 or 25 county employees that are associated with our regional offices. We have basically five divisions. Our technical services division, which of course are our Salem-based technical folks, the water measurement folks, the groundwater folks, the people that do our GIS work, and as well as our basic computer folks are housed in this division.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. GIS?
GIS, excuse me. Mr. Chair, Representative, Geographic Information System, basically mapping.
Thank you.
And I apologize. Please please catch me on those acronyms when I use them.
That's the system that kind of helps you with your little map in cars, tell you where you are and how you get from where you are to where you supposedly want to go.
That's a good way to characterize it, Mr. Okay. Chair.
I have a quick question for Mr. Ward.
Representing
Mr. Ward, can you just remind me how many water masters are currently on your staff, and do they correlate to the regions, the larger regions, or how that is determined?
to do. We have about 40 field staff, and about half of those are actual water masters, and then a number of assistant water masters, and those do correlate to the field staff. In fact, we'll, in another slide, we'll move to a little more detail on that, if I can hold the rest of that answer till we get there. So our Water Rights and Adjudications Division, again, these are the folks that actually you go to for a permit to use water in this state. And a critical division in the agency, our Field Services Division, which the representative just mentioned, and we'll talk about a little bit more in just a second, and of course our Business Office Administrative Services, and then the Director's Office, of which Adam and I are both a part. So if we could have the next slide, we'll talk a little bit about the regional offices and our regional staff. Five regions today in the Water Resources Department, though we're looking at some consolidation relative to budget issues of our Southwest region and our Northwest region. Ultimately, we may end up with one west-wide region. And these are the folks that are on the ground that enforce water law in this state. They're the folks that ensure that if you have a right to use water and you have a priority for the use of that water in Oregon's system, that you get that water. And so about 40 folks around the state, about 20 of those are what we call water masters. A number of others are assistant water masters. And other technical and support staff, and then about 20 people actually funded by counties but attached to our staff that serve as assistant water masters and in other capacities that are located in our regional offices. So if you go to Baker, you can find a water master. If you go to Burns, you can find a water master. All these spots have a regional presence and an office, quite often co-located with county offices in those areas. So, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'll turn the next little bit over to Mr. Sussman.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Adam Sussman with the Water Resources Department, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. And hopefully you have the slides, a copy of them, if you can't see them from there. What I was going to do is just walk you through some of the real basic elements of Oregon water law, and I'll probably introduce some terms and concepts that as we go through the session we'll probably break down in much, much greater detail. But I think this may be helpful if you're not familiar with them. So I'm gonna kind of cover these four main points, and these are sort of the take-home points that the waters in the state of Oregon are public water, and in most cases to appropriate and use that water, it requires a permit that you obtain from the Water Resources Department. We also operate in Oregon strictly under the doctrine of prior appropriation, which some of you may have heard of as first in time, first in right, and we'll go back to that concept earlier soon. The next one is just to lay out the very basic provisions of Oregon's water code. The water code for surface water was adopted in 1909, and a lot's happened since then, so we'll cover some of that. And then finally, I'll give you an idea of sort of the permitting process and sort of the life of a water right development, if you will. So next slide, please. So this is just, again, to remind you that, you know, when you look in the statute, it says basically the waters of the state are the public's waters, and there are a few exceptions to that, but again, for the most part, to use water, whether you have a stream running through your backyard, whether you have an aquifer in your field outside, for most uses of water, it does require a permit. There are a number of uses that are legislatively exempt from the permitting process. So that doesn't mean they're not involved in the regulation and distribution of water. They're simply exempt from the requirement to obtain a permit. An example might be a small well for domestic use for a single house, as an example. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, the water code in the state of Oregon for surface water was adopted in 1909. But prior to 1909, there was a lot of uses of water, particularly on the east side of the state, and some of them dating back to the 1880s. And so when the water code was adopted in 1909, the state had to go through a process to adjudicate the pre-existing uses of water. And as we go through the session, you'll probably hear about the Klamath Basin adjudication. That's what we're doing. We're trying to sort out uses of water that were established prior to the water code being adopted in 1909 and figuring out essentially who has what. What should the priority date be? Where does the water go? And how do they line up as compared to one another? That whole adjudication process is kind of an administrative process and then ends up in the court where the court issues a decree and establishes water rights. As we go through that, we also look at water rights that were established by the reservation of certain federal lands, and we also look at tribal claims to water, of course, that were established before 1909 as well. And we hope to use a lot of ADR, alternative dispute resolution, to work through what is a very difficult and complicated process to adjudicate claims that come in for uses before 1909. I just one thing I wanted to mention as well is we had our surface water code adopted in 1909, and it wasn't until 1955 that the state of Oregon adopted a groundwater code. So we also have a lot of claims pre-1955 for the use of groundwater that eventually we'll need to adjudicate. Next slide. Thank you. When Oregon's water code was adopted in 1909, it had really four fundamental provisions that were important then and are extremely important now. And I'm going to walk through all of these, but I'll just highlight them here that if you're using water in the state of Oregon, beneficial use without waste is the measure of any use of water in the state of Oregon. So if you're using water, it needs to be for beneficial use without waste. Again, we operate under a priority system, which becomes very important as we talk about legislation in the future. And a water right, in almost all cases, is attached to a particular piece of property. And I'll explain how, if you want to change that, there's a process you need to go through to do that. And then some of you may be familiar with what some people refer to as the use it or lose it provision in Oregon's water code, where it does require sort of a continuous use of the water, or there's the potential to lose the water right. So next slide, please. So I'm jumping back to that first provision of beneficial use without waste. And on the right side of the slide, there's just some examples of what a beneficial use is. It's important to understand, and the chair and I have had many conversations about this, that you cannot go and open the Oregon Revised Statute and find a comprehensive list of beneficial uses. There's a lot of references in the statute to different kinds of beneficial uses with very open clauses that might say something like, or anything that may be of value to the public. So there's a lot of discussion in the statute, but no comprehensive list of beneficial uses. But these are some examples of some typical beneficial uses of water that you'll hear about as we move through the session.
Adam? Excuse me.
Yes.
Is there any prioritizing of beneficial use?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there is a couple references in the statute that try to do a bit of prioritizing under situations perhaps of drought or situations where two water rights with exactly the same priority date are competing for water. And typically in those scenarios, there's a prioritization to, you know, human-type consumption uses and livestock uses in general. That's a very general statement. Next slide. Thank you. This is this is really the cornerstone, at least today, of Oregon's water law. And one of the things I think that the department spends the most time doing is ensuring that this system, fragile as it is, stays in place, and that any changes to the law that might be made or any decisions on permitting that we might make protect those users that already have existing water rights. And that's a really important part of the department's existence. We do this through the priority system, the doctrine of prior appropriation, which is very much based on what we call the priority date of the water right. And so if you submit a permit application to us in 1910, you establish a priority date of 1910. And that priority date is compared to other users of the same source with a different priority date, and in this case, someone with a 1970 priority date. Now, this becomes important when stream flows get low or we're in a drought situation, and in some places of the state, this is an exercise that we go through annually where there's not enough water to satisfy the senior user, in this case the 1910 water right holder, and that water user can then call up the water master and say, I'm not getting all the water I'm entitled to, please go curtail the use of Mr. 1970 upstream, and the water master has the opportunity to go out and actually take control of the head gate where the water's diverted and make sure that the water user with the senior priority date is fully satisfied. So that's a lot of what our field staff do, holding together this very fragile priority system out in the field. I also mentioned this concept of appurtenancy, and probably a good example would be is that if you were to acquire a water right for irrigation of 5 acres, the department's permit would very it would describe exactly the location of where that water right is, and that water right is attached for all intent and purposes to that piece of property. And for example, if you were to sell the land to someone, the water right remains with the property. There's only one way that you can change the location of that water right or how you're using that water right or where you're diverting the water for that water right, and that's by going through a formal process. It's a statutory process that allows you to change. It's called a water right transfer, and it allows you to change many of those elements, the place of use, the type of use, and so on. Thank you. The other thing I mentioned was this use it or lose it provision. Again, part of the original fundamental principles of Oregon water law, that if a water right is to go unused for 5 consecutive years, there's a possibility that it could be forfeited and you could actually lose the water right. So that's sort of the continuous use portion of the 1909 water code. This, again, I think is just to get you familiar with some of the terminology that we'll be using through the session. Every water right permit that we'll be talking about has a source of water, identifying whether it's surface water or groundwater, or whether it's from a certain stream. It'll identify the type of use, again, the beneficial use of water. It'll actually describe the point of diversion, or for a groundwater use, we call it point of appropriation. And again, it will specifically describe the place of use or the appurtenancy of that water right. This is just a quick diagram to give you an idea of sort of the life of a request to develop a water right. An application is submitted to the department, and that's really a green light to go ahead and begin the development of your use. That's when we issue your water right permit. And under that permit, you have a number of years to develop the use. So you may come in and request to irrigate 100 acres, and through the proving up process, you may ultimately only develop 70 acres. When you're ready, when you're finished with your development, the water right holder is required to submit a claim of beneficial use saying, this is what I've done and I'm finished. and then the department issues what we call a water right certificate, which vests the water right and attaches it to the piece of property. Once you have that water right certificate, there's a couple avenues you can go. As I mentioned, you can modify it by doing a water right transfer, or if for some reason it wasn't used for five consecutive years, it could get up end up canceled. And there's probably a whole bunch of things in between there that might happen. But that's just really quickly sort of the life of a request to develop a water use. There's another type of water right that the legislature has deemed a beneficial use of water that I didn't mention earlier, and it's called an in-stream water right. And these are water rights that actually leave water in the stream, typically for stream flow restoration or pollution abatement, or in fact for recreation. And there's actually two different ways to establish an in-stream water right. One is a state agency can apply to the Water Resources Department and go through a process to get a water right with a priority date, just like any other water right. Or under other statutory provisions, you can take an existing water right and change the character of that water right and put it in stream for stream flow restoration purposes, and it would carry the priority date of the water right where it originated. So sort of two different mechanisms to establish an in-stream water right. The next slide. This just gives you an idea of where there are in-stream water rights around the state of Oregon. The sort of enabling legislation wasn't until the late 80s, early 90s, to establish in-stream water rights. And since then, there's about 1,400 in-stream water rights in the state of Oregon. And that 1,400 is part of about 84,000 total water rights in the state. So that kind of gives you an idea of how they stack up.
Well, I think
of that, of that 1,400, what portion of them are just new water rights, and what portion are transfers?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have an exact number, but I would say the vast majority are new water rights with junior priority dates that were established by state agencies through the application process, and a much smaller number are water rights that have been transferred in stream with more senior priority dates.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to follow up. I can actually get you more specific numbers.
Excuse me, Adam, but what is the practicality of a junior in-stream water right when not all of the activities, whether it's recreation or environmental, in almost all of the cases, the need for that in-stream water right is during times of low stream flow, and therefore if all of the others have priority, what good does that do to have that water right?
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think you're right on point that most of these in-stream water rights have priority dates of the early 90s. And if you're, for example, in southern Oregon, where we have water rights that are being regulated back to 1887, any given summer, there really isn't a practical benefit, say, during that month of July. There may be other months of the year where it may provide a benefit in terms of high flow months as well. And some of the agencies, I think, may place those there as kind of a management objective to say, this is what we understand there's not this much flow, we understand we're junior in priority, but we think we'd like to let people understand that these are the kinds of flows that we think are necessary to the benefit of these kinds of uses, fish, recreation, pollution abatement, and others.
Following question on that, Adam, is I've got an 1880 water right. Is that saleable to someone for in-stream purposes?
Water
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, as I mentioned earlier, there's the statutory process that you could take your water right and transfer it from one use to another, including in stream. I would bet that you could find somebody that may be interested in working with you to make that sort of transaction happen. It wouldn't be the state of Oregon per se, but there could be private nonprofit environmental organizations,
or it might be the city of Wilsonville,
or it could be the city of Wilsonville or others.
That would be a long pipeline.
Well, I picked Wilsonville because they've been managed in something of the historical past so well by their former mayor that they've got a whole wealth of money available to them that they can do those things. Representative Shoffler, yes.
Thank you. And I apologize for being late. I had it in my head that we were 1:30, and I'm the only one in the building that had that in their head. So I do apologize to everyone in here. I'm rarely late. Now, Mr. Sussman, if I have a water right and it goes way back and I transfer it in stream for restoration, remind me, can I take that back out again and start irrigating at a later date, or is it in there for good?
Mr. Chair and Representative Shoffler, there are ways that you can do that. There's different mechanisms. You can permanently transfer it in stream. You could transfer it in stream with a time limitation that after 10 years that unwinds. You could, in fact, enter into a lease agreement with the state to lease it in stream, which is quite easy to unwind. So there's lots of different tools in the state's toolbox for those kinds of issues.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay, then. Kind of a follow-up on that.
Representative Byron.
Thank you. And this new use, then, preserves the right.
Chair Jensen, Representative Barnhart, that's correct. It would carry the priority date of the originating water right, yes.
Okay. All right. I mean, all of a sudden, I'm imagining situations in which people with very old priority dates might want to make certain that they were able to preserve their right and would make some short-term arrangement in order to do that. I don't know if that happens often.
Chair Jensen, Representative Barnhart, in fact, it does, and the state of Oregon has this water right leasing program that I just mentioned, and it's been a very successful program because it can be used in many ways, one in sort of part of the water rotation of a farmer, and they can lease that water and stream and preserve the right and not have to be concerned about forfeiture issues and maybe even get some value for leaving it in stream during that 1 year. Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Brown.
If you have an in-stream water right, then use it or lose it wouldn't apply, right?
Chair Jensen, Representative Brown, and you guys are really testing me because you're moving around without your... Your name tag on the first meeting, so I think I got it. That's right. I mean, it's as when the water is in stream, that's considered a beneficial use of water. So it's considered being used, and there's no forfeiture issue.
Follow-up.
And so if you were down to 4 years and 10 months, and you successfully transferred that water right to in-stream and put a time frame on it of 6 months or a year to when it came back, as far as using the water right on land, you'd start over and start a new clock in?
Chair Jensen, Representative Brown, that's correct. You would have been considered to have beneficially used the water right. And so, again, with the leasing program, I think it's a great tool for folks who may be concerned about those kinds of issues to put the water to beneficial use.
Thank you. Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regards to municipal water sources as well as special districts, do the same rules basically apply if there's not been a use of a particular resource within 5 years, and then the water right is extinguished?
Chair Jensen and Representative Crummell, actually the The statutes have lots of special provisions that apply to municipal corporations in particular for water use for municipal use. And in fact, there's a provision in the forfeiture statutes that exempts a municipality from the five-year non-use provision. Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Representative Brown.
Wasn't there recently a court case where the a city or a municipality lost their water right that they hadn't proved up on?
Chair Jensen and Representative Brown, the case that I think you're talking about would be for the Coos Bay North Bend Water Board. Okay. And I'm sure this committee will have lots of opportunity to talk about that case and legislation associated with it. That case was more about the Water Resources Department had proposed to issue a permit to the Coos Bay North Bend Water Board, and that permit was appealed to the Court of Appeals, and the court essentially said that the department had erred in its interpretation of the statute and should not have issued that permit. And I know I'm not giving you a lot of detail. That was the gist of it. And I think the concern you'll hear both from the state and the municipal water suppliers is that if that's the court's interpretation of the statute, we need to take a hard look at that and make sure that we have a means to have secure long-term water supplies for our municipalities.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for the record, that bill will be before us in the committee. It's been pre-session filed and is in the hopper already. Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair, to kind of tie things up here, just a brief treatment of some of the issues that we see as key to the effective functioning of our agency and facing the resource and those that use it in this state. Certainly our agency has experienced an ever-increasing workload with decreasing resources. We've dealt with that in a couple ways and had some reasonable success. We have used technology in recent years very effectively to automate a lot of what we do. And in fact, you will be seeing a bill that will ask you to give our commission the authority to actually reduce fees for folks who provide information to us in a digital format so we don't have to manipulate it by hand as has been our historic manner. The other thing that I just would mention quickly, and again, this is something that we're going to address in greater detail with this committee in the future, but this body enacted a piece of legislation last session known as the Reimbursement Authority Act that allows us to work with folks who want to move their permit application or other function they're working through with us ahead in the line. It enables us to contract with some outside contractors funded by the applicant to get some work done in a more timely fashion. This has been something that actually has worked very well for us this session, and we'll be describing in detail later because we're going to ask you to remove the sunset from that originally enacted legislation. Certainly satisfying additional demand in a system that's largely appropriated is a difficult one, and one that is what generates the comments that prompted your committee motto, I think, we talked about earlier. Again, I mentioned briefly earlier adequate budget. Certainly that's something that we'll be working through in the Ways and Means process. And streamlining our processes in terms of how we function as an agency is something that we're paying a lot of attention to right now. A number of the pieces of legislation that will come from our agency for the consideration of this committee will be co-sponsored by the Office of Regulatory Streamlining, because we're making a real attempt to take a hard look at our processes, simplify them and streamline them in a manner that doesn't compromise the resource protection, but allows us to do them in a manner that saves time and money. And so that's a priority for us. You're going to see some legislation to that effect. Nope. You're right on target. Just a couple more key issues. Most of you probably have heard of the Klamath adjudication. This is a large-scale major adjudication in Klamath County of the water rights in that area. This is well underway, and we believe we're making significant progress towards the ultimate completion of this adjudication. The governor has chosen, as a part of his investment strategy in this budget, to invest some additional resources in the Klamath adjudication, the process by where we work through who has the priority water rights in that basin. And so that is underway, and I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to visit with you more about that during this session. Understanding the resource, we think it's extremely important that in order to make the kind of decisions that we're going to have to make about water allocation in the years ahead and the use of the resource, that we understand the resource, the current state of the resource and our impact on it. The way this most practically works out in our agency at the current time is through groundwater studies that we conduct in cooperation with the U.S. Geographical Survey, and sadly our funds to participate in these studies have been diminishing in recent years, but we have had good remaining support from our federal partners, and so we have a couple of these studies underway at this time. Long-term water supply for our state is something that I think we need to think about and talk about, and you all obviously have a great part to play in that. There are only certain ways you can, when supply is short, that you can deal with that issue. You can manipulate that supply by moving water around. We talked a little bit earlier about water right transfers. That's one way to move water around to put it where it's needed, both in stream or for other out of stream uses. You can increase that supply. You can do that a couple ways. The way we all think about when we talk about increasing water supply is storage. We get a picture of a dam and water behind it in our minds, but that's just one way to increase water supply. We have been successful in this state, frankly, in water conservation efforts, and have generated water for additional uses in that regard. And we're actually doing some work, and there are several municipalities in the state that are actually testing on a limited license basis some aquifer recharge activity, where they're putting water back in the ground in the high flow time of year so they can take it out when they need it, when water's tight. And so those are the kind of things that are a priority for us as an agency to continue to investigate and to support. And then certainly we're all very well of Endangered Species Act issues and water factors in to that whole realm, and certainly I don't need to belabor that today, but that certainly is an issue facing us. So that, Mr. Chair and members, is our prepared remarks. We'd be happy to answer any other questions that you might have for us.
Thank you.
Borrow our mic here since we moved a little bit. Thank you, gentlemen. That was an excellent reminder from Water Rights 101. I had a question about the status of the Klamath, and I'm assuming at some point you'll probably come and give a more expanded presentation. But as far as the adjudication, how far out? I mean, it seems like it's an ongoing process for the many, many years I've been following it. But can you give us an update on what the status is? And then also, because of the nexus with the Federal Endangered Species Act, do we receive any federal funding to help offset our costs of adjudication or augment our staff?
Mr. Chair and Representative, very very timely questions. The answer to your second question, do we receive federal support for the adjudication, the answer to that is no. And in fact, the federal courts have found that the federal agencies don't even have to pay the fees that a regular Oregon citizen has to pay to participate in an adjudication. So that essentially we and the private citizens that participate in that adjudication in Klamath County are on our own in that regard. And indeed, the Oregon Water Resources Department by the close of this biennium, I would estimate we'll have spent close to $1 million this biennium on that adjudication. That said, we're seeing significant progress in the adjudication. About 85% of the contests, and essentially what an adjudication is people making claims and other folks contesting that claim and the adjudicator working those contests out. About 85% of the contests that have been filed in the Klamath adjudication have been resolved. So
there's a light at the end of the
tunnel. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, and we are docketed out with hearings, I think, until 2007 in terms of this claim and contest process. But certainly as we move farther down the road, we're seeing more of the parties coming together on a voluntary basis and settling their contest. And that, frankly, Representative, is, in our view, is one of the great hopes for the ultimate completion of this big project.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Shockley.
And I don't know if you came prepared for this, but are we still pretty far behind in our snowpack for the year? From what I've been reading in the papers, that's still... Hopefully this weekend we'll catch up. But.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we've been making some progress lately. But a week or two ago, the number I saw was about 66% in the Cascades. Does that sound right, Adam? Mm-hmm. And so we have been behind, and we have made some ground up, particularly in southern Oregon, in the last week. Mm-hmm. And hopefully this weekend we'll make up a little more, because up in the Central Cascades we're not where we should be.
Mm-hmm. I know that you have omitted the one important part of the state in your response to his question.
The Columbia Basin, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Your information is better than mine. We're assume we're not in good shape there either.
35-40% maybe. So it's Representative Schaffer, we've already pointed out in this committee that every member of this committee is obligated to always pray for and worship bad weather. So it's rain, snow, that's what we look for. Any other questions from my? Thank you very much. Appreciate 101. I have some questions, but they seem to be maybe more important or more appropriate for a later date when we get into some of the specifics on these things. So we'll let them go and at this time and pick them up when we. To battle on some of the other bills or some of the bills that we have and legislation that we have. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay. Do we have anything that you need that we're doing, Sandy, at this point? Any comments that we need to make?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I just have a question. Do you want your meeting materials delivered prior to you in your offices, or would you rather just have them here at the dais, or both?
I'd rather have them ahead of time.
I think it's...
Do my best.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Okay. I think it's easier if we've had an opportunity to look through them. One of my constant kind of complaints is getting hit with things in committee that I'm not necessarily briefed on. And so I appreciate doing this. As you note, I did have mine.
I know you did.
Only because my staff is aware of, at this early date in the thing of my thing. I think there's nothing else for the good of the order. And seeing no other questions, with that we will close our first committee meeting.
I've had 1:30 in my head.